Welcome back. You're listening to Cross the Border. We're going through 1 Kings. We've ended up in chapter 3. And there came a case before the king. The king was like the judge who would judge cases, hard cases that people couldn't settle themselves or within their families. And there were two women. They came before the king. They lived together. They were ladies of the night. They didn't have a husband, but they lived together in the same house. And they had a child. Each of them had a child. Their children were born 3 days apart, so approximately the same age. And it came to pass one morning that they woke up, and one of them has a dead child in her bosom. And her story is that it was the other woman's, and that she switched childs because she said, "This one isn't mine." I think a mother would know her child. And anyway, it's a very sad story, basically, you know, to suffer the death, but then to follow it up with this kind of deed to switch a child, whether that happened or not. But that's the story. One says, "The dead child that I woke up with wasn't mine, that the other woman switched it." So they're standing before the king, and the king hears their story, and the king says, "Bring me a sword." The king said, "Bring me a sword." And so they brought a sword before the king. Everybody's going, what is he going to do? He knows which one it is, and he's going to slay the wicked one, or, you know, the liar. Well, both of these women, you know, are suffering. One has suffered the death of her child. Which one it is, I don't know. But the king, he says, "Bring me a sword." And they brought him a sword. And the king said, "Divide the living child in two and give half to the one and half to the other." Whoa. That's pretty heavy stuff, man. And what are these women thinking? What is everyone thinking? Then spake the woman, whose the living child was, unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, "Oh, my lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it." But the other said, "Let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it." Yikes! Yeah, that's kind of a dead giveaway, isn't it? And the king answered and said, "Give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof." And all Israel, see, that hit the tabloids pretty quick, right? And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged. And they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was with him to do judgment. Don't mess with the king. The Lord, the Almighty, is with him. So they feared the king. Chapter 4 and verse 1. So King Solomon was king over all Israel. And these were the princes which he had: Azariah, son of Zadok, the priest, Eliphareth, and Ahiah, the sons of Shisha, scribes, Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, the recorder, and Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the host. And Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. And Azariah, the son of Nathan, were over the officers. And Zabud, the son of Nathan, was the principal officer and the king's friend. And Ahishar was over the household. And Adoniram, the son of Abda, was over the tribute. I guess he's the tax collector. And Solomon had 12 officers over all Israel, which provided victuals for the king and his household. Each man, his month in a year, made provision. And these are their names: the son of Hur in Mount Ephraim, the son of Dekar in Mekaz, and in Shealbim, and Besh Shemesh, and Albeth Hanan, the son of Hesed in Aruboth. To him pertain Sukkoth and all the land of Hefer, the son of Abinadab, in all the region of Dor, which had Tephath, the daughter of Solomon, to wife. Baana, the son of Ahilud, to him pertained Taanach and Megiddo, and all Beth Shean, which by Zartana beneath Jezreel from Beth Shean to Abel Meholah, and even unto the place that is beyond Jokneam, the son of Geber. Now, if you live there, you would know where all these places are, I suppose. It's kind of like, if I was to liken it, it would probably be more like the Southland in California. You know, if you live down there, you know where all the little towns and the cities are around about there. Because Israel, well, isn't that big even today. The son of Geber in Ramoth-Gilead, to him pertaineth the towns of Jair, the son of Manasseh, which are in Gilead, to him also pertaineth the region of Argob, which is in Bashan, 70 great cities with walls and brazen bars. Ahinadab, the son of Idu, in Had-Mahanaim. Ahimaaz was in Naphtali. He also took Basmath, the daughter of Solomon, to wife. Baana, the son of Hushai, was in Ashner and Aioth. Jehoshaphat, the son of Parua, in Issachar. Shimei, the son of Elah, in Benjamin. Geber, the son of Uri, in the country of Gilead, in the country of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, and Og, the king of Bashan, and he was the only officer which was in the land. Judah and Israel were many, as the sand which is by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and making merry. Now let me ask you a question. If Abraham was told that I will make thy seed as the sand of the sea, and it says here that they were as the sand which is by the seed in multitude, isn't that fulfilled? Seems there at least a partial fulfillment there, if not a fulfillment. Yes, he did make them as he promised, sand which is by the seed in multitude, eating and drinking and making merry. So basically, there's multiple millions of people here in the land of Israel and round about under the reign of Solomon, the king of Israel. In verse 4, or verse 21 of chapter 4, and Solomon reigned over all kingdoms from the river unto the land of the Philistines and unto the border of Egypt. They brought presents and served Solomon all the days of his life. And Solomon's provisions for one day was 30 measures of fine flour and 70 measures of meal, 10 fat oxen and 20 oxen out of the pastures, and 100 sheep beside harts, and roebucks and fallow deer and fatted fowl. For he had dominion over all the region on this side of the river, from Tiphsah even to Azah, over all the kings on this side of the river, and he had peace on all sides round about him. And Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. And Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots, and 12,000 horsemen. The peace by strength, who around Solomon would dare, go after Israel, when you had, it says that you had the wisest man who ever lived. Nobody, so they feared him because of the judgment that he had. So he had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And those officers provided victuals for King Solomon, for all those that came unto King Solomon's table, every man in his month. They lacked nothing. Barley also and straw for the horses, and dromedaries brought they unto the place where the officers were. Dromedaries, a relay of animals on post route stored up for that purpose. Yes. I guess that's whatever the horses need and the animals. They brought him to the place where the officers were, every man according to his charge. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all of the children of the East country, and all the wisdom of Egypt. You know, sorry, Buddha. Solomon's wisdom exceeds Buddha and all of those other children of the East. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Hermon, and Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame. Let's see, those must have been really wise guys in their days, so they're mentioning them. He was wiser than all them, and his fame was in all the nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And he spake of trees, from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts, and of fowl, and of creeping things, and of fishes. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth, which had heard of his wisdom. So a person there, he had a court. People came to have their cases heard, all the hard cases, came to Solomon the king there in Jerusalem, and they must have had quite an audience. You know, the stands must have been full continually, since people came just to hear Solomon's wisdom. Must have been the best entertainment. I mean, you know, they watch Judge Judy on television, like that's something. But it's entertainment, but I don't know how much wisdom you'll find there with Judge Judy and all of the spin-offs from that program. There you go. If Solomon was alive today, he would have the highest rated program above Judge Judy and everything else. We're in chapter 5. Oh, wait a minute. Are we in chapter 5? Let me see. Did we get to the end of chapter 4 there? Sometimes it's hard to tell. Yep, that's it. Chapter 5, verse 1. And Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants unto Solomon, for he had heard that they had anointed him king in the room of his father. For Hiram was ever a lover of David. And Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, Thou knowest that David my father could not build an house unto the name of the Lord his God, unto the name of Yahuwah his God, for the wars which were about him on every side, until the Lord put them under the soles of his feet. But now Yahuwah my God hath given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrent. And behold, I purpose to build an house unto the name of Yahuwah my God, as the Lord spake unto David my father, saying, Thy son, whom I will set upon thy throne in thy room, he shall build a house unto my name. Now, you know, we consider, say, Adonijah, who sought the throne, would he have asked for wisdom and understanding? Would he have built a house? Would he have built the first temple, Solomon's temple? I think not. He could not get it straight. Instead of going into the king's throne and getting the king and the priests and the prophet to anoint him properly, he went out and had a barbecue with all his friends and got them all to chant. Yeah, he certainly would not have done the right thing. So we see here a huge difference between one son and the rightful heir to the throne. He said, Behold, I purpose to build a house unto the name of Yahuwah. And there it is, actually, the name, the Lord, in the 3068, in the Authorized King James Version, unto the name of the Lord my God. And the Lord spake unto David my father, saying, Thy son, whom I will set upon thy throne in thy room, he shall build an house unto my name. Now therefore command thou that they hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon, and my servants shall be with thy servants, and unto thee will I give hire for thy servants, according to all that thou shalt appoint. For thou knowest that there is not among us any that can skill to hew timber like unto the Sidonians. And it came to pass, when Hiram heard the words of Solomon, that he rejoiced greatly and said, Blessed be Yahuwah this day, which hath given unto David a wise son over this great people. And you know what we see here? We see a demonstration how a good king and people that follow the Almighty can have effect on the nation and the peoples around them toward faith. Because obviously this king here in Tyre, this king of Tyre at this time, says he, Hiram, loved David. He was ever a lover of David. That means that David had an effect on him toward godliness and holiness. And now he proclaims and praises the God of Israel by name, calling him, as it's recorded here in the Authorized King James Version, where it says, the Lord. He actually, it is the 3068, the name of the Almighty, Yahuwah. So it came to pass that Hiram heard the words of Solomon, that he rejoiced greatly and said, Blessed be Yahuwah this day, which hath given unto David a wise son over this great people. And Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, I have considered the things which thou sentest up to me, and I will do all thy desire concerning timber of cedar and concerning timber of fir. My servant shall bring them down from Lebanon unto the sea, and I will convey them by sea in floats unto the place that thou shalt appoint me, and will cause them to be discharged there. And thou shalt receive them, and thou shalt accomplish my desire in giving food for my household. So they work out a deal for the timber. So Hiram gave Solomon cedar trees and fir trees according to all his desire. And Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 measures of wheat for food to his household and 20 measures of pure oil, and thus gave Solomon to Hiram year by year. And the Lord gave Solomon wisdom, and he promised him, and there was as he promised him, and there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and they too made a league together. And King Solomon raised a levy out of all Israel, and the levy was 30,000 men. And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month by course. A month they were in Lebanon, and 2 months at home. And Adoniram was over the levy. And Solomon had 70,000 that bare burdens, and 70,000 hewers in the mountains, beside the chief of Solomon's officers, which were over the work, 3,300, which ruled over the people that wrought the work. And the king commanded, and they brought great stones, costly stones, and huge stones to lay the foundation for the house. And I don't know if you've ever seen these stones that they, even in the wall of the city, these were huge stones. They don't build like that anymore. And these stones were hewn so that there was no mortar between them even. They were hewn that closely that they fitted that tightly. So amazing work. Just really amazing work that they did in these ancient times. The king commanded, and they brought great stones, costly stones, and huge stones to lay the foundation of the house. And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them, and the stone quarers, so they prepared timber and stones to build the house. What an undertaking to think that they're going to try to duplicate that undertaking today. We shall see. And it came to pass, in the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign, over Israel in the Mount of Ziph, which was the second month that he began to build the house of Yahuwah, the house of the Lord, the temple, or they call it today, historically, Solomon's temple. Now, I consider that they're going to start to build a third temple in Jerusalem. And this is going to kick off the 7-year tribulation plan of for Rome to pull off their play in the Mideast. Yeah, what am I talking about, right? This may be new to a lot of people. But when you consider how they built this temple and what it took to build it, and how closely all these stones fit, and even the foundation stones, they're preparing all of this, and then they begin to build it. And I guess they have enough to start building so that the materials keep coming till completion. And it didn't take them, you know, just a couple months to build this thing. I wonder how long it would take and how, you know, they've got a budget. I wonder how far over budget they're going to go to try to build this ancient architecture and to build it right according to the ancient architectural drawings. You know, I mean, just the wall, if the temple hadn't been burned and overturned by the Romans in the first century, when they destroyed it the second time, they completely overturned everything. I mean, it was worse than the first desolation. The desolation was complete the second time. And they overturned every stone to get all of the gold because they overlaid all the wood, all of that cedar that we're talking about. It was all overlaid with gold. And so when the temple burned, all that gold melted down in between the stones, and they overturned every stone to get the gold out. So, and that's, you know, the Messiah said it, there shall not one stone be left upon another. He prophesied that. That was an unpopular prophecy in his day. You can see why the Messiah wasn't a popular prophet in Judea when he prophesied things like that. And he also said that they're going to kill you with the sword or take you captive and sell you into slavery into all nations and destroy the temple, the city, and pretty much the nation is going to be completely destroyed. And so very unpopular prophecy. But to consider that, how they're going to rebuild this temple. So I know that they're going to at least start to rebuild the temple, the third temple, because they're preparing for everything. They're practicing over there in the desert. And supposedly, you know, they're getting all the stuff together to build it. And so they're preparing. They got to get all them cedars cut and, you know, all that old technology, the way they would have built it then. I'm sure that the plan is to duplicate the temple the way it should have been, you know, according to the ancient plans. Now, who builds like that today? Well, nobody. So I think it's going to run over budget, and it's going to take more time than they think. And I don't know if they're actually going to get it completed or not, because it says that they're going to put an end to the sacrifice in the middle of the week, in the middle of this 1 week that they say is Daniel's 70th week, but is not, but is false prophecy. So even if they stop or it runs over budget and they can't complete it, that'll be close enough to qualify as putting an end to the sacrifice. You wait and see. I doubt if in 3.5 years they're going to have this temple built and complete and institute the sacrifice. Because I know, you know, that the Heavenly Father put an end to the sacrifice, that the Messiah put an end to the sacrifice in the middle of the 70th week by the sacrifice of himself. And I also have come to believe that that began the time of Jacob's trouble, because it was 40 years from the crucifixion, putting an end to the sacrifice, to the total destruction and annihilation of Jerusalem, the temple, and the city. You're listening to Cross the Border. Come back next time.